This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning and welcome in. Grant and Danny out and about and on the road. We walked down South Capitol Street, broadcasting live from Nationals Park on what promises to be a pristine day for baseball. I asked Alexa when I woke up today. She told me it was going to be 70 degrees right around first pitch.
One of those 48, 49 at wake-up time, up to 80 at one point today. It's going to be cloudy. It's going to be nice. Come on out and watch the baseballs.
Spring break is ongoing, I believe, in D.C.
It
at
is.
Least some schools, so there's no traffic, which is nice. Makes it easier to get to and from the ballpark. I improved my morning. I just watched some type of high-speed pursuit in California for like 10 minutes live on Facebook, which was pretty cool.
You did do that.
So far, so good today. I can't really complain. I've been entertained. There's been a lot to like about this Thursday. Hopefully it ends as well as it has started. Of course, the Caps play the Canes in Game 4 tonight. Pumped about that. The Nats and the Giants today, a series finale. And we are now officially 1 week away from the NFL draft. The Redskins schedule was released. We'll hit all that in our 1-2-3 first. But how you feeling today?
Feeling good, my friend. It's the rhythm is off. The rhythm is off with this two-day playoff layoff, so to speak. But the Caps back at it tonight, trying to wash the taste of the other night out of their mouths. They need it. I think this is a massive one tonight. So I've got that pit in my stomach. I've got the nerves again. I wasn't sure if they'd come back, you know, given the fact that they won the Stanley Cup championship last year and the Stanley Cup made the rounds and the Junkies got rings. I have it again. I've got the anxiety. I've got postseason hockey, what it does to you where every time it goes into your own zone, you've got that loss of breath and you're panting and your stomach feels sick. It's back.
Yeah, it's the first time I've felt any angst or anxiety, really. It's somewhat limited because they're up in the series still. Now, I'll say this. If the Hurricanes win Game 4, at that point, you got a best of three and no momentum.
Yep.
I'm going to have some fear, some nerves, and I'm going to feel like I felt for all those years as a Capitals fan before they won the Stanley Cup.
Because they won the Stanley Cup last year.
They did. Just to reiterate, they're the world champions. Mm-hmm. Nobody's better. They are the title holders, and nobody in Pittsburgh can dethrone them because the Penguins have been eliminated. But, yes, Game 4 is tonight. They've got to make some major adjustments. We'll talk about some of the line changes from head coach Todd Reirden. The specifics are bountiful in that Tom Wilson is no longer top line Tommy. He's been moved down to the second line. TJ Oshie has been moved up to the number one line with Ovechkin and Backstrom. Andre Burakovsky is going to skate on the third line. Christian Juice has been benched. So is Chandler Stephenson. So we'll get into all of that today as we give you your full Game 4 preview. But they've got to look a lot different than they did in the third game, Game 1 in Carolina, where the Hurricanes just exploded for 5 goals and did everything other than win a fight. I mean, that was the only area, really, where the Caps didn't get eviscerated,
right,
was Ovechkin knocking out 19-year-old Andrei Svechnikov. Meanwhile, here at Nationals Park, last night, the Nats pulled a Carolina Hurricanes and offensively exploded for a big output. Howie Kendrick hit his third home run of the season. He is sticking to the pan hot. He's earning himself more playing time. Kurt Suzuki belted his second long ball. Juan Soto hit his third. And for the second time in as many days, Matt Adams gave a fan a souvenir, a moonshot for Adams that busted the game open as part of a 5-run seventh inning that put the game out of reach.
Here's the pitch. Swinging a high drive, right field deep. Going back on this one, Duggar to the track, to the wall, and there it goes. Matt Adams has done it again. A 3-run home run breaks this one wide open. Nationals 7, Giants 2. Adams' second home run in as many nights and his second home run of the season. A 3-run shot against the lefty.
It's a good thing the Nats had a home run derby and 4 guys homered last night because their bullpen imploded again. We'll get to that in a second. A 2-for-2 now for Jeremy Hellickson in his starts. 6 really good innings against the Phillies.
Just doing what he does.
5 2/3, 2 runs against the Giants last night. You give the Nats a lot of credit. Before he came to Washington, he was allowed to go through the lineup a third time. He was treated like a normal starting pitcher. I remember asking Mike Rizzo right after they acquired Hellickson, I thought, you know, what do you see in this guy? He had a pretty bad year in your division last year. He said, we know something that's going to help him that we're going to implement that's going to make him a better pitcher. Well, that something is essentially you don't let anybody see him a third time, and it has worked brilliantly for 2 seasons.
It's been a boon. It's been awesome. You find somebody like that off the scrap heap that last year at times, non-Max Scherzer division was your most consistent starter, and he's done what he did last year already through a couple starts this season. Now, it ends up looking like a completely different game because, as you mentioned, the bullpen again. This time it's Austin Williams. He got his turn to give up gopher balls, 2 there in the ninth inning. So you have to burn your closer once again and most of your A bullpen. Kyle Bearclaw got ready in a hurry, and you had Sean Doolittle get ready in a hurry. You had to bring them in a game that you were up by 7 runs in the ninth inning.
This is the second time in a couple weeks.
Second time it's happened.
That the Nats have led by at least 7 runs and had to pitch Sean Doolittle in a near save
they
situation.
They were 12-1 on the Mets in the 7th, I believe.
And he had to use their closer. Yeah. He got 2 outs last night, gave up a hit and a walk and a strikeout, so he's still scoreless in his appearances. Doolittle joins us each and every Tuesday at 11:45 here on Grant and Danny. But the other point is that you're right, they had to use Kyle Bearclaw. Now, they used him for 1 out, and I didn't really understand that. I thought they should have just given him the inning, but it made some sense after the game. Davey Martinez was essentially with a big lead managing for today as well because he said, we're probably going to have to go back to Bearclaw. So by only letting him get 1 out, he only threw 4 pitches, he'll be able to throw again today. So take that for what it's worth. But they ended up having to use 5 relievers after Hellickson went essentially 6 innings, and they got 5 perfect outs of relief from Wander Suero.
That was big.
Huge. He's become the best reliever they've got other than Sean Doolittle at this point, which is obviously not necessarily a great award to win, but it's a trophy you get to put on your mantle anyway. Third and finally in our 1-2-3 first, the Redskins schedule is out. Everybody was curious when the Redskins would be playing the Minnesota Vikings. It's going to come a couple of months into the season, almost smack dab in the middle of their schedule. At this point, we can talk about that or any of these other matchups if you'd like, but what I like to do is kind of look at where is the tougher part of your schedule? Where is the weaker portion of your slate? And to me, the Redskins are going to be tested right off the bat.
Yep.
They play 4 2018 playoff teams in the first 5 games of the season. Now, the carryover year to year is tough to decipher. We don't know what teams are going to look like. We don't even have draft classes added to these rosters yet. But it's obvious to me that the first month and change of their season is going to be immensely arduous. Everyone's excited for that Thursday, October 24th primetime game against the Vikings in Minnesota and Kirk Cousins. But the other thing that stood out to me, and Redskins fans should be elated by this, but it's very telling and revealing about just where this team is and what the nation thinks about them and the networks perceive of the Redskins. They have 2 primetime games on their slate. There's a lot of years where the Redskins play on Monday, Sunday, and Thursday 5 times. The last 2 years, not great expectations, 7 primetime games. This year, 2, and none in the division. When's the last time you can remember not a single Cowboys, Giants, or Eagles game in primetime?
It's been a minute. I mean, it's hard to get that nitty-gritty into the depths of the schedule, but your point about trying to find the difficult spots, we all do the exercise. I mean, but another reminder, number 1 million, why it's irresponsible to start predicting wins and losses, and you say playoff team versus non-playoff team. From 2017 to 2018, 6 teams that made it didn't make it the following year. So then the corollary is 6 new teams jump in. You have no idea. Nobody knows at this point. The Mike Shanahan axiom always applies. When you play is more important than whom you play. And you would think the only thing that you know at this point in the NFL, everyone else is subject to parity except for the Patriots. The Patriots are going to be good. That's the only thing we know at this point. Everyone's chalked Green Bay as a loss, but that's a group that was 6-9-1 last year with a brand new coach. No one has any idea how any of these teams are going to be. So again, predicting win-loss record before the draft, before another round of free agency, before training camp, before preseason, before any injuries take place with these various rosters is a futile exercise. I look at, when I start to see schedules, anything unfair isn't the right word because everyone has to deal with adversity, but are any of those Sunday to Thursday and then Monday to Saturday, any of those kind of weird, quirky things? And you don't have that with this Redskins schedule this coming year. Because remember, a couple years ago, they had three straight road games, so they had the Sunday into Thursday a couple different times. That doesn't exist here. This is more of a normal, true schedule, if that makes sense. And it's a lot of Sunday at 1, which is what I love. There's a consistency to it, far less kind of wheeling and dealing that sometimes comes with schedules and teams get the shaft. The Redskins didn't get the shaft this year. No traveling to London, no Mexico City, nothing crazy. Just line up and play at 1 for the most part with two exceptions.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. If you want to talk Redskins schedule, we will have time to do that today. We will get into the Nationals closer to the first pitch of their game against the Giants as well. But next, right here on 106.7 The Fan, your flagship home for the Washington Capitals. The game's tonight, just after 7 o'clock in Raleigh, where in Carolina the Capitals have a chance to go up 3-1 as they defend Lord Stanley's Cup in round one. The Eastern Conference has opened up for the Capitals. They got to take advantage of their meeting with Carolina tonight, though, or else nothing else matters. Here's the question for you on the Hadid Carpet Cleaning listener lines. 800-636-1067. 800-636-1067. What I want to know, what Danny wants to know, what's your gut feel? They got embarrassed in Game 3. It was a scary, alarming performance. Will they leave it in the rearview mirror, or will it carry over next on Grant and Danny?
Hey, guys, Grant and Danny for our friends at Roofing Nation. We love these guys. They are so good at what they do. They're our friends from Window Nation. We love them. We had Window Nation work on our homes, and you have to make sure that your roof is taken care of because roofing problems are expensive problems, except with Roofing Nation. They'll fix it right now for as little as $3.99 per square foot. You've got to hit them up. These guys are awesome, and we love them.
Roofing Nation, our friends from Window Nation, as Danny said, they're going to take great care of you. It's that time of year where right now you can get someone out there, assess some of the damages of the winter, the cold, the sleet, the wet, the snow, the rain. That roof got beaten up. Right now you got to get it fixed. And our friends at Window Nation, with their roofing wing, are going to take good care of you.
36% off a brand new roof plus 0% interest for 36 months. You've got to go to roofingnation.com. That's roofingnation.com. Get yourself a free estimate. Hit them up, roofingnation.com.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Welcome back. We are live at Nationals Park. The Hadid Carpet Cleaning listener lines available for you. 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. Caps, Canes, Game 4 tonight in Carolina. It's going to be raucous. You heard the atmosphere from your TV screens like I did in Raleigh. We've talked to guests who are in the building. They comp what the Caps had to deal with for Game 3 with anything they experienced last year. And part of the reason they won the Cup last year, their game was portable. They were exceptional in the playoffs.
Yes.
They went 10-3 on the road last year.
That's the number, man. That's just crazy. So stunning, right?
They were really good. Obviously, in the opening round in Columbus, they hit the road down 2-0 and then came back even in that series before winning 3 of their 4 games on the road to start the whole thing. But then you fast forward, and you beat the Penguins in Pittsburgh. You eliminate them. You move on. You come back, and you celebrate in D.C. You go to Tampa Bay for a Game 7. You have no problems. You win there. Shut out the Lightning. The Stanley Cup, they steal home ice immediately from Vegas. Those atmospheres were electric.
That was incredible.
Those buildings were
incredible.
Energized. They're pumping in noise. Nothing fazed them. That was not the case going back to Monday night.
They were fazed, you would say. And that happens. Again, if you told me, like, if I couldn't watch the game or, like, I was traveling or fell asleep for 72 hours. And he said, hey, Caps dropped Game 3, energetic building. First time Carolina's had a playoff game in a decade, right? The building was going nuts. Carolina's pretty good. It's everything we knew. and you told me the Caps dropped up a 4-3 game or a 5-3 game because there was an empty net or something like that, I could absolutely live with that. The way Monday went is hard to unsee because that's not what it looked like at any point last year. Even the games that they lost where Grubauer let in a couple goals that he shouldn't have, or they were getting outplayed by Columbus maybe those first couple games, or that bad loss. I think it was game three when they came back home against Tampa. Just things didn't look right, right? And it never looked like that. It was never you went an hour of real time without a shot. It was never that you didn't get your 10th shot until 4 minutes left in the second period. It was never that thorough a butt-whipping. So that's hard for a lot of Capitals fans, a lot of sports fans, to sort of wash away and unsee. Athletes don't care. They'll be fine. These Caps guys are tough enough. They'll be all good. But as a fan, as somebody that just, you know, obsesses over this, it's hard to get that out of your head.
Yeah, it is. And everyone I talk to, and this is people from the Capitals themselves to, you know, my buddy who's works over at their ice complex, kind of cooking the meals, who's just a huge Caps fan, to the people that have watched games in my basement during the playoffs who mark out with me, you know, after big goals. Everybody I've talked to this point, the feeling is these guys respond.
Yeah, they'll bounce back.
These guys bounce back. These guys don't internalize these losses and let them linger. And that's all probably true, but that was the past. That was last year's run. That was last year's cup. That was 2 years ago when they always got back up after they'd fallen down and pushed series to six or seven games. So, yeah, you'd like to think they'll do it again, but every iteration is different. Every club's a little bit different. So the question we've got for you guys is, what's your gut feel tonight? 800-636-1067. And most people who are saying, oh, the Caps will respond, they're basing it on last year. They're not basing it on anything they saw on Monday. I do think they'll play a lot better. I just think that they are a better team than Carolina, and to be that dominated, to be manhandled to that extent,
it's not going to get beat that way.
It's just not going to happen again. The question becomes, though, do you win or not, right? Because you could play a really good game and lose 3-2. You could go out there and do everything right and lose, you know, 4-3 tonight on the road to a red-hot team who's got one of the best records in hockey since January. I picked them to come back to Washington, D.C., up 3-1. I'm going to stick with that. I think they find a way tonight. I think Braden Holtby's tremendous, and I expect their stars, led by Ovechkin, Backstrom, and Oshie, that top line, to account for a couple of goals. Maybe one of them has a three-point night, something like that, on the power play. But I think the Capitals, in a close game, do win. What about you?
I think they play better. I don't think it's going to be like that again. I know that's a very bold prediction out on a limb, but I think this series is going deep. I predicted before the series started it was going to go seven because Carolina's better than we think. I really do believe they found something, talking about Carolina, the way that they're playing against the Capitals. Frustrating them to no end. The forecheck is so aggressive, and the Caps can't take advantage of that. If they were a number of odd man rushes, you'd force Carolina to change. Think about what's happened since Monday night. A number of line changes, a couple substitutions for the team that's better, the team that should be controlling pace of play and everything else in this series. The Caps are switching Tom Wilson off the top line, putting TJ Oshie up, moving Andre Burakovsky around, benching Christian Juice for Jonas Siegenthaler. They're the ones making all the adjustments, and Carolina's just saying, nope, we got it. We're doing what we've been doing the whole time, and we're going to do more of it until you prove you can stop it. So to me, I think the Caps play better. I do think they respond. But I also think, again, Carolina's pretty good. I think it's a close game, but I think Carolina wins this one. We're coming back 2-2. I still believe the Caps win the series, by the way, but I think this one's going seven.
If they lose tonight, I think they're in trouble, actually. Because to get to a point where you've now lost two straight, where the series is even, where you were probably lucky to be up 2-0, and now Carolina's got all the momentum, I think that would be a bad look for them. Tom is in Manassas. Let's start on line one. Tom, how do you feel about the Caps and the Canes tonight? You'll hear it on the Fan.
Good morning, guys. I feel great, and I'm basing it off of what they've done this year, especially since the break. They do bounce back. They have resiliency. Grant, I disagree. If they do lose tonight, I don't think they're in trouble. They still hold home ice. They can go back back up here for game five and have a great shot. Look, nobody said it's going to be easy. It's going to be tough. You're not going to win 16 in a row. We didn't give up when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor, and we're not giving up now.
That's a good
Let's
point.
Go, Captain. I'm cutting bait.
There you go, buddy. Appreciate you. Tom in Manassas is on the boat. Yeah, we got it real efficient tonight because I got to tell you, the Andrea Gale ran into an iceberg on Monday. We didn't see it coming. It pierced the side of our ship.
It pierced Brosnan.
And we took on a little bit of water. Now, luckily, by taking on that water, we were able to put some duct tape over that hole, and mm-hmm. we're staying afloat, mm-hmm. and we're continuing our journey, and we hope to reel in more fish today. But we need to get those fish. Otherwise, we might have to return to port for some changes, some tweaks, maybe kick some people off the boat, get some new people on the boat.
A couple of line mates were removed from the boat forcibly.
John in Olney, you are on the Fan. The Capitals looking to respond tonight, will they?
Hey, guys, how's it going?
What's up, bud?
Good.
I actually do think they respond, and I actually think that Monday night's loss was the best thing that could have happened. I kind of disagree with Danny in the sense that if they lost 2-1, you know, I kind of think they were that, like, if they're like flipping a radar, I mean, they didn't play that good in games 1 and 2. I think the 5-0 loss and go on top of it, have 2 days sitting in a hotel in Raleigh, I think this all really, really helps them kind of refocus, re-energize. They weren't good, like I said, they weren't good in games 1 and 2. I think they put forth their best ever tonight. They do win. But, and I have one more quick point, if they don't win tonight, I still am really confident they win this series. And this is why. I don't think they did the reverse of last year in Columbus where they win, or where they lost first and win 4 straight. I can't see Carolina winning 4 straight in this series. And that means they would have to win a game 7 in D.C., and I just can't imagine after the Stanley Cup loss last year, we lose game 7, first round to Carolina. So I'm actually super confident in this series still. I kind of love how the East is shaping up for the Caps to go back and have a rematch with Vegas in the Stanley Cup Finals.
John, thank
Good
you,
call,
buddy. Yeah, make no mistake about it. I'm exceptionally confident in the Capitals right now. I believe they're going to win the series, even if they lose tonight. That won't waver. I think they will win the series. There's a difference to me, though, being confident and expecting to win a series and saying that they're in trouble, in that at that point now Carolina's believing in themselves. They easily could have won game 1. They didn't. They took the Caps to overtime on the road in game 2. They lost that game as well. Then they will have dominated them in game 3 and beaten them however they did so tonight if they ended up winning that game. And it's a best of 3 series. The Caps beat Carolina the first 6 times they played this year, counting the regular season. So to assume that they will lose 4 in a row, let alone 4 of 6, I guess it will have taken, or 4 of 5 after the 2 games to start the series, I don't see that happening either. But you can't wait. You got to get right, and it's got to start tonight. If the Caps do win, how will they have done it? Write the script for this game. Who plays big? Who scores the goals? And what do we get out of Braden Holtby and net if you're watching this evening in and around D.C.? 800-636-1067 is the number. We'll get into the Redskins' schedule before the end of the hour on Grant and Danny on the Fan.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
The Caps play the Kings, so we are starting the show looking ahead to a vital Game 4. The Hadid carpet cleaning listener lines are open for you at 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. It is a very comfortable, warm, pleasant day. We're at Nationals Park. The Nats play the Giants in the final of a 3-game series, a rubber match. Winner of today's matinee ballgame will win this 3-game set. Our Caps discussion is presented by PVI Office Furniture. Fast, excellent, affordable. Business grows with PVI. With office furniture solutions for every budget, visit PVIPVI.com today. Danny, if the Caps win tonight, first and foremost, you need to not leave Braden Holtby hanging out to dry.
You can't do that. He's not laundry.
You need a better defensive performance. It starts, I think, with the benching of Christian Jews, who was horrific in Game 3. I trust Jonas Siegenthaler more, as crazy as that sounds. He's played a lot less. Juicer was actually pretty good in the playoffs last year. This is not last year. He hadn't been playing well. He's not playing with any confidence. Siegenthaler is a little bit bigger, maybe slightly more physical. I will throw him out there and see what I get out of him in the 7 to 10 minutes of ice time he'll probably get. But the guys that get paid a lot, the heavy lifters, so to speak, on the blue line, that's Dmitry Orlov, that's Matt Niskanen, that's John Carlson. That is recently acquired trade acquisition, who then you paid and extended Nick Jensen. You need more out of all those guys. I think Carlson has been, by and large, very good in this series. Everyone else has had moments where they were susceptible to a mistake or a blunder. Tighten up on that end of the ice. This team won its first ever Stanley Cup last year because it was really good defensively. In Game 3, they were the antithesis of that.
Two things happen if they win tonight. Two things happen. Number one, to piggyback and even echo what you just said, the terrible turnovers, the inability to get the puck out of your zone, that's gone, and they look like the Stanley Cup champions again. The puck zips up the ice, and you punish Carolina for getting three guys so deep. The third forward's not really staying too high in the zone. He's pinching down, taking away outlets. If you're able to solve this pressure, you win this game. Second thing that happens, your bottom six, most specifically your third line, which has not scored in this series, does. You get something where you should have an advantage. Your down-the-line guys, your Connollys, your Ehlers, your Burakovskis, your Haglunds, are better than their guys' version. You're better than Carolina's version of that. Win that matchup. Find a way to create some pressure. Because a lot of times those guys obviously are on the ice when the better offensive pairings are on the ice maybe for Carolina. Punish them a little bit. Make Sebastian Aho back check a little bit more. Get some pucks deep. Work it around. Work your cycle, Joe B. And put some biscuits on the net, for goodness sakes.
Lars Eller's got just a point in the three games of this series so far. That was the empty net goal. And as important as it was in game one to solidify a victory, it came without a goaltender between the pipes. Matt Niskanen, Dmitry Orlov, defensemen, they've chipped in with a point. That's fine. But that's more points than you've gotten out of a forward in Carl Hagelin, who spent time on the second line as well as on the third line. Nick Dowd, three games on the fourth line. I'm not expecting goals or, you know, some six-point series. However, to have right now just two shots on net in a pointless minus-one performance, in buttering the biscuit, to use your phrase. Brett Connolly, a minus-two, three shots on goal. Still no points. Chandler Stephenson got benched. He didn't have any points or a single shot in this series. He had provided next to nothing, so he now doesn't have a sweater. Andrei Burakovsky was the one guy in the bottom six that did get a shot in game three. He's been moved up to the third line. You mentioned Jacob Varana. I'm going to double-click on him. Varana's upside, particularly in a playoff series, I think is massive. He is fast. He is great with the puck. He is able to beat a forecheck so often because he has the ability to stick handle, to skate, to pass, and get through the neutral zone with speed to the point where he can create rushes. We saw him finish out in front on two-on-ones and one-on-zero breakaways all year long, but you got to get him going. He was a 24-goal scorer despite very little power play time, despite the fact that he never really played on the top line. I don't know if people know how hard it is to almost score 25 goals without those two opportunities presented
That's
to
right.
you. That means you could be a 33, 34-goal scorer in the right situation. He needs to give this team something offensively tonight, and it's really got to start or else they're going to be in a little bit of trouble. What do you think is more important, the defensive end of the ice or the bottom six doing anything?
Defensive end of the ice, because the story of this series, and again, here's your take a shot, not having Michael Kempney back there and the inability to get the puck out of their own zone. Really, in game number three, it was exacerbated. It was the worst you've seen in a Caps postseason performance in some time. But that's how Carolina creates their business. That's how they get going, is they get the puck deep, they're flicking a shot towards the net, they make you deal with it. They make you chase it and chase it and chase it and chase it. Tire you out, throw the body a little bit, they get the turnovers, that's where their golden scoring chances come from. They're going to throw pucks to the net. That's what they do. It's how they've always been. And in game three, it was obviously incredibly effective, and also getting some of those turnovers. If you don't turn the puck over, if you are able to clear the zone and tilt the ice at least even or get it back the other way, God forbid, you're winning this game.
I got a tweet from Myron, who on Twitter said, I always live by the concept that a series does not start until a team wins on the road. I believe the Caps are just fine. I believe they will win tonight. I believe in that axiom as well. However, that paradigm gets you to a point where you believe in a Game 7 win and eventually you'll win the series on home ice. I don't have any interest in a Game 7 in the first round against the Carolina Hurricanes. And it's not that I would go into a Game 7 scared, like any Game 7. It's two frightening words. Obviously, you'd have some nerves and anxiety. It's that you were up 2-0. This is a team you are better than. I would like just once to step on a throat. I would like to end a series in 5 games. Worst case scenario, 6, and move along. You've got the Islanders now waiting for the winner of this series, who handled their business in four games, who are resting and licking their wounds and getting as fresh as they possibly can. And who knows, if this thing goes seven, maybe they'll have too long of a layoff and can work against them. But I would prefer just one time to take advantage of a quality start to a series and put a team away. So I'm not telling you that they're going to lose the series if they lose tonight, but there are ramifications here where you've got a golden opportunity.
You do.
Go up 3-1, and you get three cracks at beating this team to advance.
You got smoked the other night. That doesn't count as two losses. That's if you'd lost in overtime, if you'd lost 1-0, if you'd lost 10-0. It doesn't matter. It's just one. You are still in the driver's seat in this series. Good point by you.
Grant and Danny on the Fan, live from Nationals Park, hanging out with our producer, Brendan, the jack of all things. Jack Hicks
He's
is here, bringing us waters, which is very
Jack
kind
Hicks
of him.
Is here, everybody.
Just a sweet
Jack
man.
Jack Hicks is here.
The jack of hydrogen to oxygen. Danny, something smells delicious.
Yeah.
What does that smell?
The fryers have been turned on. Repeat, the fryers have been turned on. So the suspects here are, I say hot dogs, but I don't know if that's correct, but the hot dogs and fries right here in front of our face.
I'm thinking it's
and the
Hicks
Hicks.
Seafood.
It could be the Hicks.
I think it's the fryers they use to fry up some of those shrimp.
Yep.
Some of those popcorn shrimp that
the fried
you might
oysters
pummel in the third inning
are
today.
Just so delicious, Town USA. God, I love that place.
Next, let's get into the Redskins' schedule having been released. What do we think? Games you like? Games you think you might want to travel to? Anything about this schedule stand out to you when you first took a glimpse yesterday? We're Grant and Danny. Before we get out of here at 12:30 today, the Nats are playing a 105 game right here at Nationals Park. We've got to preview a Game 3 matchup with the Giants. Winner of this game takes the series. Not quite as important as the Cap series.
No, it's different importance level.
Early season, National League, NL West matchup with San Francisco. So a Dodgers afternoon victory over the Cincinnati Reds yesterday. You want to see San Diego in town with all of that. Brilliant young talent. You got to be listening at the top of the hour at 11 o'clock to Grant and Danny here on the Fan. Schedule came out. One thing we don't do is predict wins and losses, but I'm curious, Danny, about in general how much you care about the schedule release. I believe this has become one of those things that the media probably cares more about than fans. It's pushed and perpetuated as if fans are kind of hanging on the edge of their seat, needing to know what's the week 4 matchup, and then it comes out one at a time. It's like, here's the week 11 game, here's the week 3 game. It's like people are sitting at home writing it down on notebook paper, filling it out. I don't get the sense that's actually happening. Am I wrong about that?
I don't think you are. I think this is, some people scoff at, you know, the combine or scoff at the draft. Those are legitimate activities, right, where great athletes are doing great athlete things, or your team is selecting from a process. Everyone enjoys drafts. That's why fantasy sports is so big. This is the all-time nothing burger. This is the most futile, nonsensical, bizarre rollout that's treated like a significant date on the calendar. I'll never understand it. We already knew the collection of opponents. Now we just have the order, but people treat that like it's secret information, and then the leaks happen all day. One of the more annoying days possible. Only second to how annoying it is when people predict wins and losses and go, the Bears, I'll always say they beat the Bears. The Bears were 12-4 last year. It's the no one knows anything, and it's irresponsible to try to predict what's going to happen at this stage before all the player acquisition is done and knowing how this league turns over, but people can't help themselves. So here's what jumps out to me about this schedule. It's the early, three of the first four games are divisional opponents. Typically with the Redskins, I don't say typically, but oftentimes over the last several years, you've seen only one divisional game before November or something like that, right? One or two. And they've had to close with a flurry of divisional games, and that all kind of gets decided there.
Well, teams always close now in their final couple of weeks in the division. You're always playing in the division in week 17, obviously.
Yes. So it's the beginning and the end of the season is bookended. The three divisional games to end the year and three divisional games in the beginning of the year. And that's where it kind of ends up. So it's not sprinkled throughout, as you would, I don't want to say normally see, but oftentimes see.
We got breaking news right now. We got to go back to our D.C. studios, an extension for an up-and-coming Redskin. Let's get the latest.
That's right, Grant. Breaking news on the Fan, powered by Radio.com Sports and brought to you by the 2019 Mercedes-Benz A-Class. One of the most underrated players, perhaps, on the Redskins team, defensive end Matt Ioannidis, gets a three-year extension with a base value of $21.75 million, according to Mike Garofalo. Another $3 million in incentives as well. He, of course, was a fifth-round pick out of Temple at 7.5 sacks for the Redskins this past season. $14 million of this is guaranteed cash. Again, Matt Ioannidis gets a three-year extension with a base value of $21.75 million. He's one of the Redskins slated to be with us at the Anthem next Thursday as part of NFL draft coverage here on The Fan. We'll have more details as they become available throughout the day right here on Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan.
Thank you, Pete. So there's your news. The Redskins have gotten a deal done with Matt Ioannidis. Three-year extension, $21 million. Don't want to risk him becoming a free agent at year's end. He was a fifth-round pick, as Pete told you, out of Temple, entering his fourth and final year of his contract. And he's coming off of a breakthrough season. Now, really, his year was defined by the first half of a campaign that was dominant, and the second half when he was a little bit banged up. And this is a story over the last 2 years for him. He's gotten off to really, really good starts. He had 3 sacks through 5 games and 5.5 sacks through 7 games. In fact, all 7.5 of his sacks took place before week 11 on November 18th. In the last 7 games of the season, he didn't have a single sack. So there's a consistency that you're looking for now, and basically an ability to sustain over the course of a season with durability. He hasn't been healthy. He hadn't played at 100% in December yet. He's missed 2 games each of the last 2 years. But this is a run-stuffing presence who can rush the quarterback at the defensive end position in a 3-4. When you can get a guy who can do both, and the Redskins have found one, you keep that player. And this is what you should want, Redskins fans.
Yes.
Draft your own. Develop them into a really quality high-end piece. And then re-sign them before you have to, so that you don't have to pay top-of-the-market dollar. Fifth-round pick, slam-dunk success from the scouting staff, Kyle Smith, to the coaching staff, Jim Tomsula, to the front office, Bruce Allen, everyone doing their part here. Congratulations to the Redskins on getting him locked in.
That's a good deal. So I'd love to see the cap figures as they apply. I'm hoping that Eric Schaefer, you know, sprinkled his fairy dust on it, made it a little bit magical so that it doesn't impact them too negatively, but I'm with you. This should be the goal, right? This is player development. This is the thing that traditionally, to be honest, the Redskins have not done a great job of, turning the, even if it's early round picks, mid round picks, what have you, into stalwarts of the organization. Guys end up walking for whatever reason, whether they weren't good picks or they weren't particularly good players or they never developed the right way, whatever. This is a win for the Redskins scouting staff, for their front office, and for this team. Ioannidis is good. And everyone that knows about it, knows about it. People that are in the know, he's not a household name. He's not J.J. Watt. Not everyone can be. He is a really productive football player. So I think the way that you put it, as a run stuffer, yes, the strength. And that strength, couple times a game, there is a guard somewhere on skates. That's the thing that I love so much right now, because of how quick passing games are and the timing and, you know, these you know, sort of pistol shotgun formations, whatever. The ball comes out so quickly. The way to disrupt now, more than it's ever been, is internal pressure. It used to be the glamorous bookends and the guy making his way around the right tackle, and it took 7 or 8 seconds as the quarterback pats the football. Those days are dead. It's about quickness. It's about taking away the first read or the first option because you're in the quarterback's face. I love Ioannidis.
Yeah, what you need really on the defensive line is someone who is disruptive. That's the word you use. Troublesome and rowdy and disorderly and just kind of creates problems. He does that.
Yep.
He is big and he is strong. His rookie year, by the way, he played 10 games. He didn't start in any of them. I think he made 8 tackles. He mostly was on special teams. And I didn't think that this guy was going to be an NFL player beyond his first contract. I wasn't sure he'd get to the end of his first deal. He came back as a sophomore.
Something happened, man.
There was no Redskin more improved from year 1 to year 2, 2016 to 2017, than Matt Ioannidis. And then, after 4.5 sacks over 14 games, he got hurt. And you went, oh, well, maybe that's kind of the best we'll see of him. He jumped to another level. What if he's got a little bit more in the tank? From year 1 to year 2, he went from ineffective to pretty good football player. From year 2 to year 3, he went from pretty good football player to fringe Pro Bowl type. If he would have had a better second half, he might have made the Pro Bowl. Does he have any more in the tank to go along with Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne
and
out of Alabama?
That's the key to me. It's, you can never single up on any one of those guys, right? Or in this game, you can never really afford to consistently double team one of those guys. And when you don't have a weak link in the chain, everyone's going to get theirs. Everyone's going to eat. You're going to see Deron Payne with a couple explosive plays. You're going to see Jonathan Allen with a couple explosive plays. And Ioannidis as well. This, to me, is what I've begged for so long when it came to the defense. So much, way less Kendall Reyes, please. Way less Jason Hatcher. Way less Stephen Bowen. Way less cast-offs from other teams. Your own homegrown group of guys that come up in your system where there is no weak link. Those three guys, they're going to eventually be the team leaders. And you've already seen it with Jonathan Allen. He's probably going to end up being the captain at some point, if not this year, but coming up soon. That's going to be the core of the team. When you think of the Redskins, I want you to think of those three guys.
Yeah.
That's, to me, the future of the team.
Allen's a guy who could go get you 8 or 9 sacks. Ioannidis is in the same boat. I think Deron Payne's probably more of a 4 to 6 sack guy and a little bit more of a big body against the run. But the three of them together are a core to a brilliantly built, professional defensive line. I mean, that is far and away the best outfit that you've got on this roster of any position group. If you want to react to the Matt Ioannidis signing, you can do that next. 800-636-1067. 800-636-1067 on the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Listener Lines. Live from Nats Park, coming up in our 11 o'clock hour. We've got a Nats stock report. Should be a good one after 4 home runs from the boys in a win last night. And we will continue to get you ready for the Caps and the Hurricanes as we close in on Puck Drop tonight, Game 4, Round 1, Eastern Conference NHL Playoffs.
My name is Danny Ruye. I drive a Ford from Tedbert Ford. My wife drives a Ford from Tedbert Ford. You're probably sensing a theme here. We really like Tedbert Ford. These guys are so good at what they do. It's how they've been in business for 60 years, serving D.C., Maryland, Virginia. You got to check them out. Ford makes the cars. Tedbert makes the difference. When you buy from Tedbert Ford, you're going to get the best buying experience in town. I purchase cars, so have you, right? You know how much of a hassle it can be. Not at Tedbert Ford. They take the pain away. They will treat you great. They know that this is your time. This is your money. This is your thing. You're not a professional car buyer, right? You're just someone that needs to get to where you want to go, and you want to do it your way. They will let you. These guys are awesome at what they do. When you buy from Tedbert Ford, okay, you get Tedbert for life. That's confidence for life, including powertrain, service loaner program. They'll replace your battery every few years, right? They'll fix your windshield if it chips or cracks, nitro tire fill, and complimentary Virginia State inspection all for life. You bring it in for service, the inspection is the best. Gotta go see it. Grab that shit till it's put away. Where you go? Go.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.